Please be seated, won't you? Well, good morning. There's an old story about the Quakers in Pennsylvania. And if you remember, William Penn, who is sort of a famous early American, is one of the people that a lot of different, that Pennsylvania is actually named after. And there was a kind of a Quaker movement that went on. And there was this story that used to go about that I think will make sense in a minute to you. The story goes something like this, that there was an itinerant preacher who was going around from community to community, and he shows up in this one small sort of woodsy Pennsylvania town at the time. This is a long time ago, by the way, 1800s or somewhere in there. And he comes in and he starts preaching that the end of the world is nigh. In other words, the end of the world is about to happen. And he goes around and he convinces everybody that they need to sell everything they own, and they're going to have this big event, and then on this particular Sunday, everyone's supposed to bring everything they have and give it to him, and then the God is going to come the next day. You ever heard this? It doesn't go over too well in Episcopal churches, so if you've attended Episcopal churches, usually that's when the rector gets removed. But they bought into it. He was so convincing. But there was one person who was a Quaker, the only Quaker in the community, that said, "This doesn't make any sense to me. I think you all shouldn't do this. I think it's a bad idea." Well, guess what happened? The guy shows up, everyone brings their money, he takes the money, he takes off, and the one guy left is the one that knew that he was a fraud. I think it was kind of an interesting story. I remember coming across it a number of years ago, and it's sort of telling. It's telling in that we're susceptible, do you know what I mean? We sometimes can hear things and we can get sort of caught up in the moment. I don't know that any of you probably bought survival kits around the turn of the century. Remember when 2000 was coming and all the electricity was supposed to go off and mayhem was going to happen? I always thought it'd be really funny for someone at the electrical company to just kind of right at midnight, just turn everything off for a few minutes and turn it back on. I just thought that would have been really kind of an interesting, but that's why I don't work for the electric company. I was thinking about that story. And then I was thinking about what was in the gospel today when I was preparing for the sermon. There's a great line at the end of the gospel, just to refresh your memory. Whoever gives a drink to the child among you, whoever gives a little bit of water, will receive their reward. This is the story that comes right after the gospel we had last week, which sounded like Jesus didn't want us to have any kind of normal family relations. We're supposed to be father against son and daughter against mother and all this kind of stuff. And then he says something so radical as, if you just give a drink of water to a child, that's enough to receive your reward. Last week, and I don't remember if it was at this service or it was about a month ago, we had something happen at the church. And if you're on Facebook, you kind of heard me talk about it this week. Someone came to our congregation and introduced themselves early in the morning, had paperwork, asked for prayers, and then stood up in the middle of the service and said, "I'm on my way to Greece, I need help." And what do people in the church do? But we were very generous. People came and gave me money to give to him, and then he left. We all thought it seemed real. He had what looked like plane tickets, he had a great compelling story, he seemed very sincere, and he was out the door. Well, interesting thing was, is last week Kelly was serving at St. Margaret's Episcopal Church in Lawrence, Kansas, and guess who was there? The same guy, with the same story, with the same copy of plane tickets, with the same urgency to go about. And so after we heard that, I sent a note out to my Episcopal colleagues in the area. He'd been to about 5 churches over the last couple weeks doing the same thing. Not a very pleasant thing to have happen. I wish I could tell you that it wasn't the first time, that it was the first time this had happened, but we get called and get asked for money all the time. I can't tell you that a day doesn't go by that someone doesn't call asking for help with something. And it's really hard to know the person who's telling you the truth and the person who simply is really desperate and has nothing else to do, has no other recourse than to call congregations and to try to find help for utilities or rent or whatever it might be. It's always hard to discern the legitimate ask versus those who are just simply trying to get a little money out of you. Another story that I'll just tell you about. When I was at St. Michael's, I was a new clergy person, We don't have any new clergy around here or anything. And I got into St. Michael's, and I had my first discretionary account. You know what I mean? All clergy have a discretionary account. It's where you can help people. And this guy called me, and about every 6 weeks he'd call, and he just needed a little bit of help. And then his first grandmother died, and I was young enough to not know better. And then about 3 months later, his other grandmother died. And then about 6 months later, his other grandmother died. And then about a year later, his other grandmother died. Then I moved away and went to Arkansas for a while. I came back, and within 2 weeks of being at St. Thomas, somehow this guy had found out I was here. He called, and his fifth or sixth grandmother died. And he had to get somewhere, and he needed cash only. So after a while, you get a little jaded, and you get a little careful. But at the same time, there's this piece of scripture that says to give drink. And when you listen to the story, there's story after story of people coming to Jesus for help, and Jesus doesn't often ask questions. He simply offers the help that he can, whether it be healing, whether it be water, whether it be forgiving, whether it be all kinds of different things that you can do. And so the question is, how do we be generous without being suckered? How do we be generous without enabling? How do we be generous without necessarily losing our shirts, so to speak? I think it's a tough question. So I started, after this happened, through my frustration and all this stuff, we talked to the police, and then a detective came. We had a long conversation. The detective kept saying, "Your name is really familiar to me," which is not always a good thing to have a detective say. I haven't committed any crimes. It got me thinking for a minute, and I thought, well, he probably just came to a service or something, but we had these long conversations, and then letting our colleagues know and letting others know. So hopefully if this person shows up at another Episcopal church, he won't be able to do what he did here. But we're going to continue to help people when we can, because that's what we're called to do. And it got me thinking about all the different ways our congregation has helped people in the last several weeks. You might not know this, but the folks at Safe Home, which is a shelter for women and children who are in situations of domestic violence, it's a place that is near the area, and it's a great place of solace for families going through those particular difficulties. You might not know this, but they know to call us when they have situations where their resources can't meet a need if it will prevent someone from getting into danger. And so we get a call or an email every few months asking for a little help with rent. Earlier it was help with a car that had been they needed money for the deductible because someone had been in a car accident. At other times, it's utility assistance or all kinds of things. We do this anonymously. The people who receive it don't know it, but the needs are vetted. Does that make sense to you? We know that it's legitimate, and we know that the money will go to what the purpose is saying. There's other things that we do, like the food pantry. Lots of us bring food every week. It's delivered to St. Paul's. People volunteer in that place, and again, there's things that happen in there to help to make sure that the food is going to those in need. I think of those who volunteer with IHN, where we offer support and help to families that are moving out of homelessness. The families in that program get and receive care from a social worker and care from all kinds of resources, and they get pointed towards jobs, and eventually they're helped to find a house and to have stability in their lives. It's life-changing for the folks who enter that. I think of our blood drives and our all kinds of other ministries that we're part of, where we're reaching out and helping others in legitimate ways. I think of our work with Tom's Helpers and the great work that they do for our congregation, where we provide training in a place where they're cared for and loved and treated with dignity. The Tom's Helpers program is one where some adults who come and have a little bit of a disability, they need some help to be in a place where they're cared for, and they're here and treated with great respect. So what's the difference? One theologian that I read talked about the difference between charity and justice. Charity, or caritas, is loving someone for the need that they have in the moment. So if someone's hungry, you feed them. If someone's thirsty, you give them a drink. If someone needs a shirt, you offer them a shirt, those kinds of things. Justice is changing the situation that they're in that causes whatever the poverty might be or the impoverishment. Think of Safe Home or other places like that, where the situation for that person is changed, or even greater work in society happens. And the theologian always said that the balance for a congregation or for a church or for Christians is to work in both. Does that make sense? In other words, there will be immediate needs, feeding someone a fish, and there will be justice opportunities, teaching people how to fish so they can feed themselves. And he argues that those two things need to be in balance with each other. So probably tomorrow or today, someone will ask for money. Probably someone will have a need. And probably there will be a justice that we can work on. So what does Jesus mean by this? Whenever a child comes to you, if you offer them just a drink of cold water, you will receive your reward. I think in Jesus' context, in the society that he was walking through in that time, which is not much different than ours in many ways, there was great impoverishment. There was great suffering. There were people who weren't treated with dignity. And sometimes, receiving a little bit of cold water to quench your thirst is treating another person with dignity. Now, the person who came in here a couple of weeks ago didn't treat us with dignity. He still needs help. Underneath all the things that happen, there's something wrong, broken, incomplete. I don't know that it's going to be us that's going to help him. My prayers is that someday someone will help him in some way. He'll get whatever is broken in him that causes him to cross the line, if you know what I mean, and to take advantage of others. And I don't know how that's going to look. But I can't give up hope because I know someone will come to our congregation that we can really help. Someone else will enter our doors where that drink of water might be the first moment of dignity that they've ever received. There's a chance to act in a charity kind of way and even to work for justice in all of our ministries. So maybe think about that this week. Think about what it means to really help others and that Christian call. It's easy to get cynical. It's easy to say we won't help anymore. It's easy to blame. In fact, I'll take the blame because I'm kind of hard to get by with that stuff because I was so easy when I first got ordained. It's a lesson, Ben. because I would give money out all the time. And I remember my mentor, Rob Lord, at the time, he says, "Why are you doing this?" And I said, "Well, they need help." He said, "I don't think you're helping them." He said, "You're just kind of throwing money out the door." And then when I started discovering what I was doing, and I learned that there's better ways to help. And I remember that guy coming, and I thought, wow, this is really elaborate. It must be real. But I was kind of fooling myself. But the thing is, I can think of all the ways that other people came in this week looking for help, and we were able to do that. Through the generosity of you, through the generosity of this church, through the generosity of God. A woman somewhere got her car back. Another family had their rent paid. Another family is working their way out of a situation that seems impossible to them through homelessness. Someone received food. Children were given the opportunity to learn the arts. People are given the chance to find God in a new way. We simply can't give up on those things. We simply can't turn our back. But the call is there. So what do you do for charity? What do you do to act for justice? Ponder these things, but give the children something to drink. Amen.